Preservation Hall got started in 1961. My parents came to New Orleans to visit the city. They were in their 20s, and they were deciding their future. And they came to New Orleans as a lot of young people were coming to the South to be involved with the civil rights movement. They got involved with the New Orleans music community very quickly, and they happened upon a band one day marching through the French Quarter and followed it back to this art gallery. And they met a gentleman there, Larry Bornstein, who was hosting these informal jam sessions. And he very casually offered the space to my parents to take over. And that was really the birth of Preservation Hall. It was designed as a venue with the mission to preserve New Orleans style jazz.
Were your parents musicians before they came to New Orleans?
My father went to high school on a music scholarship. He was a tuba player, and he went to the Valley Forge Military Academy in Pennsylvania. And when he graduated Valley Forge, he went to the University of Pennsylvania and graduated from the Warren School of Business. But from what I understand, he didn't play the tuba much in college. It wasn't until he came back to New Orleans, they came back to New Orleans, because some part of them must have been from here, because they love this city so much. When they came to New Orleans, my father, after meeting and getting involved with so many of these aging African-American musicians, a lot of them in the 60s, these musicians were already in their 80s and 70s and 90s. So these were musicians who were alive during the creation of jazz and participated in it. And they encouraged my dad to play tuba again. And that's when my dad first started playing tuba in the New Orleans jazz style, was when he moved to New Orleans.
Can you describe for us what the actual building is like today?
The building that houses Preservation Hall is completely unchanged from the way that it was 100, 200 years ago. There's still no running water. There's no air conditioning. There's no heating. There's a few benches scattered around a very small wooden floor room. There's no microphones or amplifiers. The band plays acoustic every night. We can fit about 70, maybe 80 people into the space. It's one of the most genuine, pure musical experiences that you can have. We don't serve drinks.
All ages?
It's all ages, absolutely. It always has been all ages. That's something that was always important to my parents. And in New Orleans, music, particularly New Orleans jazz, is something that is, there are no age restrictions or boundaries when it comes to music in New Orleans. You'll see grandparents and two-year-olds and high school kids, college kids, everybody goes out to hear New Orleans music. It's really one of the most beautiful experiences you can have, is going out to a parade in New Orleans and seeing everybody out there. Music in New Orleans is a family and communal experience.
Do you have any special early memories that help you to define your city's music today? I mean, things that you keep in mind to remind you of the legacy that you're carrying on.
I'll tell you, growing up and being around musicians, I grew up two blocks from Preservation Hall. Growing up and around New Orleans musicians was such a blessing. It's something I always go back to, because it's something you can't buy that in a bookstore. You can't go to school to study that. It's something that you do and something that you are, and that's what I think is so special about New Orleans music, is it's simply a reflection of who we are as New Orleanians and who we are as a community. It's not something you can go out and study. It's something that you are born into. And it's been like that for hundreds of years. I think it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing tradition to be a part of. I always think back about how blessed I am to have known so many great older musicians, and particularly people like my godfather, who led one of the city's great brass bands. Harold Dejean led the Olympia Brass Band. William Percy Humphrey and Kid Sheik and Narvin Kimball and James Prevost and Frank Fields and Sweet Emma Barrett and Louis Barbarin and Louis Nelson and Big Jim Robinson and Billy and Dee Dee Pierce. I knew so many musicians growing up. They all left an impression on me, and I feel like I carry a little bit of them around with me every day.
Is there any special criteria for membership in the band these days?
You know, if I had to sit down and make a list of the criteria, it probably would make no sense, because there is no particular criteria. I mean, of course, you have to be a great musician, and you know, it's important that you grew up knowing this tradition. We're all part of legacies individually, musical legacies. Everybody in the band comes from musical families from New Orleans. Everybody in the band was born in New Orleans. Probably the most important thing is to embody the spirit of New Orleans. You know, the other thing is you have to know how to cook to be in the Preservation Hall band, because food is extremely important to us. If you don't have a deep, deep appreciation for New Orleans food and know how to cook a good pot of red beans and rice or gumbo, then you're probably going to have some trouble touring with these guys.
Do you cook for yourselves when you're out on the road?
Oh, yeah, as often as we can.
Do you ever have trouble finding the ingredients
you need? All the time. We actually carry a suitcase with red beans in it, just because we know how difficult it is to find out on the road.
What kind of instrumentation is in the band that you'll be bringing to Tucson?
The band is comprised of a trombone player, Freddie Lonzo, Joe Lassie on the drums, Mark Bro is on the trumpet. We have a wonderful, wonderful elder statesman, Charlie Gabriel, on the clarinet and vocals, Clint Majan, wonderful talent on the saxophone, Ricky Monet, I call him the professor, on the piano, and myself on the upright bass and tuba.
Let's talk about the concert you'll be doing in Tucson. You're combining the sound of the Preservation Hall Jazz Band with a different sound that some people may have thought would never, ever go together, working with the bluegrass band of Del Mercurio, the true legend in the bluegrass field. How did this project come to be?
Del was the first artist to accept our invitation when we recorded our Preservation album back in 2010. He came down to New Orleans and recorded a couple songs with us at Preservation Hall. And as a result of that first time together, we knew that we were going to have to explore this relationship. Del has since explained to me that first time he came to New Orleans and sat down with the Preservation Hall band and played, he had an epiphany. All of a sudden, all the music that he had played his whole life, all the days and years he had played with Bill Monroe and all of the legends that he, all the different artists that he's graced the stage with, all of a sudden he said it all made sense to him. And for the first time, he really understood what Bill Monroe was trying to do with his music, which was create the style of music that incorporated early jazz into Western music. And, I mean, I didn't even know this, but he even told me that they even call bluegrass music hillbilly jazz. And, you know, all of these things just blew me away. I couldn't believe it. I mean, you know, for Del Mercurio in his 70s to be having these experiences is amazing to me. And the same goes for our band. It's been a huge learning experience for the guys in my band, for the first time to be exposed to bluegrass music. So the guys in our band and the guys in Del's band, it's all music to us. It's all seamless. I mean, it's amazing how much of our repertoire actually overlaps. It's amazing how similar the rhythms are and how similar the guys are, their personalities are. Honestly, I mean, I think if Del and his guys had grown up in New Orleans instead of up in Nashville, they would be a jazz band. And, you know, vice versa, we'd probably be a bluegrass band.